The list of things that happen in April boggles the mind. It is home to Easter, Passover, Tax Day, the Boston Marathon. The list goes on. And the list should also include JAM, not the stuff you spread on bread, but an acronym for Jazz Appreciation Month. People who know, love, and play jazz will observe their passions this month. Those include Ed Dunn-Savage, who's the artistic director at the Siskiyou Music Project based near Ashland. Ed, thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange today.
Thank you, Jeffrey. Good morning.
So tell us a bit about the Siskiyou Music Project, because I know there's a little bit of a crossover going on in names right now that you can probably help us weed out here.
Yeah, the Siskiyou Music Project is an offshoot of the Siskiyou Institute, which was formed as a nonprofit just about 12 years ago. It was 2002 in the autumn. And it was started as a small nonprofit to present concerts and workshops at the old Siskiyou Barn, which some of your listeners may know about. It was a private venue that a couple, Rick and Joanne Suet, had started. And they actually had produced house concerts up there for about 10 years before going nonprofit. And I discovered the venue about 14 years ago and approached them about producing some jazz events there, did a few shows that were very successful, and then they came back to me in 2002 and asked if I would be the artistic director for this new nonprofit that they were starting. They have since moved on, sold the property of the barn, and we have a brand new board of directors the last couple of years, and it was decided that it was time to sort of maybe change our name and branding to reflect a little bit more of what we do, and came up with the concept of Siskiyou Music Project.
Is the barn still a venue for you, or is it not even available to you?
No, it's still available. The person who bought the property still likes to have us do shows there. So, yeah, we still do some shows up there, although our primary venue has been, for the last several years, has been Pascal Winery and Talent. I have a long-standing relationship with the folks there. I actually played music for their grand opening, which was probably about 12 years ago, and have done numerous music events over the years. And so for the past probably 5-6 years, we've also been doing concerts there, as well as Artistic Piano. We've started a new relationship with a venue in Medford called Artistic Piano, a great piano store that has a really nice gallery where we've been presenting some piano events. So we're trying to expand out into the valley. We're next looking for a Grants Pass venue to present concerts.
So what is it still officially the Siskiyou Institute, or have you changed the name?
Legally, we're still Siskiyou Institute, but the board just thought that the word institute is somewhat.
It sounds a little rigid, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And because we don't have a brick and mortar building, we really are kind of a mobile performing arts organization. So the board had some meetings, throw around a bunch of different ideas in terms of what our identity is, and we are a music project is what it came up with. And we also have a big part of our focus is on music education, which was from the start when Rick and Joanne started the Siskiyou Institute. We combined every concert with some sort of either outreach or workshop, and we still do that.
And who is the outreach primarily aimed for? Are you trying to get to younger people or established musicians?
Yes. It's in the beginning, it was for pretty much anybody, and most of it was adults. Our typical format was a Friday night concert and a Saturday morning workshop. And we were getting a lot of adults, local musicians coming out for the workshops, but we found that trying to get students to come up on a Saturday morning was nearly impossible.
Just trying to get musicians out of bed on a Saturday morning's tough enough, I'm thinking.
Exactly. And so after about 5 or 6 years of doing that format, we got the idea to just bring music into the schools. And so I started contacting music teachers around the valley, seeing if there was interest, and there was tons of interest, especially with all of the music programs being cut and slashed around the valley. So we present between 20 and 25 in-school visits each year.
We've been holding back just a little bit. I mean, you are a guitar player and a long-established one on the Rogue Valley. Been playing for, I'm going to guess, 3 to 4 decades by now?
Yeah, I actually, with the anniversary of the Beatles invasion, reminded me that I've actually been playing for 50 years because I heard the Beatles when I was 7 years old, and by the time I was 8, I had a guitar.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you had good responsive parents then, or at least you had a paper route. Let's put it that way.
I had both.
Really?
Yes.
You earned the money for your first guitar?
Well, actually, my first guitar was a giveaway that my dad in his office, somebody had this old Spanish guitar with action that was like 3 inches high, and my fingers bled for the first few months. But they saw I was serious and didn't give it up. And so then they got me lessons and bought me my first electric guitar when I was 9 years old.
Yeah. So given the Beatles' influence then, did you play a lot of pop and rock kinds of stuff early years?
Yeah. Totally. I came up listening to all of the British Invasion bands, you know, and the Rolling Stones and the Kinks and Freddie and the Freeloaders, you name it. I had every single, and I would sit there with my little record player and try to figure out melodies on my little Sears guitar. But I was taking private lessons at that time, so I was learning to read and I was learning a little bit of music theory. But yeah, all through school, I was a rock and roll guy. Yeah.
So from whence came the transition to jazz? And this will kind of help us get off into the discussion of Jazz Appreciation
Month.
What got you appreciating jazz in the first place?
Well, I was in high school, and I was still – I mean, I was playing rock and roll. I was big into Jimi Hendrix and Eric Clapton and the Allman Brothers, that was the music I was playing in high school. And one day I was driving – I remember this very specifically. I grew up in New Jersey, and – I was driving to school as a senior and had the local radio on and happened to tune into the New York Jazz Station. And I heard this guitar player, Pat Martino, and I was just blown away. I had never heard anything like it. And so I had to wait until the song was over to find out who it was. And then that did it. I started collecting jazz guitar records, and that transitioned into Miles Davis, John Coltrane, all the rest. Yeah.
So during your rock and roll years, had you formed any sort of opinion about jazz, or was it just something that was kind of walled off from you?
Yeah, I mean, I thought jazz was just big band music. I had my uncle, who lived two doors down, was a World War II vet, and he loved big band jazz. So when we would go to his house, I would hear Benny Goodman, Glenn Miller, you know, all Artie Shaw, all those guys. My uncle was also a clarinet player. And that's what I thought jazz was. I had never heard of Miles Davis or John Coltrane or even Wes Montgomery, who had quite a bit of popularity in the mid to late 60s. I was definitely focused on psychedelic rock at that point. And getting a little bit interested in some of the other British stuff that was happening, like I guess they called it progressive rock, or groups like Yes and King Crimson, Genesis, groups that were kind of experimenting with different things. And so my ears were just open. I was just listening to anything I could. Yeah.
Robert Fripp must have been
amazing. I loved Robert Fripp. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Being a guitarist, I was definitely interested in guitar music. And then the other big influence on me was John McLaughlin and the Mahavishnu Orchestra at that time.
So how fast a transition was it? I can just imagine the first few nights you sitting around until probably 3 in the morning listening to your jazz records until you pass out. But that's just my guess. You can add the details in a moment. But how quickly did that change what you were doing in music? If you were playing these gigs where you were doing Hendrix-style stuff, I mean, at some point you must have said to your band members, I'm feeling a little differently now.
Yeah, I mean, I continued to do that. I mean, I continued playing rock and roll up until about 10 years ago, honestly. Because I could go out and make a living at it, and I've played all kinds of music, pop music, and I somewhat hate to admit it, in the 70s I played disco music because I know it was a gig, and it actually got me into working in Manhattan. I was 19, 20 years old, and I was working in New York all the time, and it was sort of the height of the disco thing. And it was kind of ironic because during the day I was studying jazz, during the night I was going and playing disco, and then on my off nights I was going to lofts in New York and hearing really avant-garde outside jazz because that's what I was mostly into at that point. But
You marinated a bunch of cultures there from the sounds of it.
Exactly, exactly.
Ed Dunn Savage, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's the artistic director at the Siskiyou Music Project. We're talking about Jazz Appreciation Month, and we'll be talking in the minutes ahead about the ways in which the Siskiyou Music Project is observing Jazz Appreciation Month. You can join this discussion on the Jefferson Exchange. The phone number for our purposes here is 541-552-6782. That's our Rogue Valley local number, Jackson and Josephine counties. Everyone else, it's a toll call, but it's for everyone. Area code 541-552-6782. I'm going to ask Ed to stand by for just a couple of minutes, though, while we move back into Fund Drive mode, because it is Spring Fund Drive 2014 here on Jefferson Public Radio. And it is the final day of that Spring Fund Drive. And Charlotte Dern's back on the microphone to bring you up to date on how things are going.
Yes, we have lots of pledges coming in, and we are looking for your pledges of support on this last day of our Spring 2014 Fund Drive. A big thank you to everyone who has made your pledge of support so far. We're getting lots of calls in. A big thank you to Tallulah Brees of Ashland. Tallulah, I'm 2.5 years old, and I love JPR. That's what we like, start them young.
Absolutely. I think Tallulah might have had a little help there, but thanks, Tallulah. Always good to hear from you.
And a big thank you as well to Patricia Jett and David Wood of Medford for your pledge of support, as well as Benita Koenig of Eugene for your pledge.
Raymond Holliday from Klamath Falls also got a pledge in here. Sid Hall in Coos Bay has been enjoying us for years. Thank you so much for signing up. Charles Schwepp in Ashland, thank you so much for your pledge of support. Now, a couple of pledges back there. It was actually for Patricia Jett. She's a doctor, and she's getting on today's doctor challenge. We had a couple of doctors in Medford, Aaron Bender and Mujahid Rizvi, adding $100 for 15 medical doctors who pledge $100 or more on this last day of the fund drive. I think we probably still have a few slots left. From what I've seen, we have maybe 6 or 7 doctors come through so far, which would indicate 8 slots left. So if you have MD, or I think we can actually expand that to DVM as well, since we had one vet insist that they should be part of this, feel free to jump in and make that pledge of support, because the way we keep programming like the Jefferson Exchange on the air, like Diane Rehm, like The Takeaway, like Here and Now, all the things you come to expect from this station and from all the services of JPR in music, in modern music, on the Rhythm and News Service, in classical music, on the Classics and News Service, we have so many options here. 72 hours a day of programming, I stopped to think about yesterday, and only about 12 hours in which to complete this fund drive. So we need that pledge of support ASAP at 888-552-6191, 888-552-6191, or pledge online at ijpr.org.
And a big thank you to James Hay of Mendocino for your pledge of support, and Angela and Sean Simpson of Medford. They said, today should be called P-Day for procrastinators.
Thanks for that, Angela and Sean. Gene Conger of Ashland called in a pledge with a very nice compliment to me. Thank you so much, Gene. I can't do this without my co-stars here, Charlotte and Reed. So thank you so much for that. Lola Cook in Eureka also called in a pledge of support. Thank you, Lola.
And a big thank you to Hector and Brooke of Ashland. Love getting the weather every morning, they say. And a big thank you to Paula and Brian Soule of Ashland for your pledge of support.
All kinds of people to thank. We want to be able to thank you as well. And we have another new member match offered today. It's a longtime JPR supporter from Ashland. Don't know that supporter's name. This is sort of like in the background, like the folks who remember the old TV show, The Millionaire. We're not going to know who the identity is of this person, I guess, giving these matches. But 100 new $50 memberships today. So normally our basic level is $45. They're bumping that up by 5. Greater commitment from you gets a commitment from this supporter. So another $50 membership brings in another $50 from this supporter to match that $50. So ultimately, you call in a $50 pledge as a new member, $100 goes into the kitty, which gets us just that much closer to the ultimate goal of $200,000 for the entire fund drive. Right now, we stand at $136,782. The mouth organ begins to give away after a while. $136,782 on the way to $200,000. So $63,000 and change left to raise. We can get there. We have done it in the past. I think we can do it again. It's going to take a concerted effort. Basically, the phones need to keep ringing until people get busy signals. And people need to burn up the wires to the website as well. IJPR.org or 888-552-6191.
And every amount can help. So whatever it is that you can donate, make that pledge of support. We can inch our way up to the $200,000. We can just speed it up and get there quickly. So make that pledge of support. 888-552-6191 or at IJPR.org. Put a value to what you're listening to. If you do enjoy all the programs that you get here at JPR, it's you that keep them on the air. Make that pledge now and don't wait till the last minute.
888-552-6191 for your pledges of support. 888-552-6191 or online at ijpr.org. And thank you. And now back to our guest here on the Jefferson Exchange. Ed Dunsavage is the artistic director at the Siskiyou Music Project, which has a number of tasks. So let's talk about what the roles are of the Siskiyou Music Project.
Well, the roles are to sort of enhance the opportunities to hear great music in the Rogue Valley, and also to bring music into the schools, and basically to sort of educate our next generation of music listeners.
And it's not just jazz, though, right? I
mean, no, it's not. It's not just jazz. We've presented all types of world music. I had a great Brazilian guitarist this season. We've done classical music, world music. The jazz connection is because that's where I'm coming from. And when they asked me to come in to help with the organization, that's what I knew. And I've also worked in music management and music booking. I worked for a great jazz guitarist, Mimi Fox, for about 15 years as her agent. And so I developed a lot of contacts with musicians from all over the country and outside of the country. And so I just sort of have this niche where I do hear about people who are touring up and down the I-5, and that's how kind of it started. And so, yeah, primarily probably 80% of the music is jazz. But, yeah, that's the focus is to create really wonderful, intimate concert experiences. This isn't the Brit Festival. This isn't the Criterion. We love those venues. But what we're doing is more on the level of a house concert where anywhere from 50 to 70 people come out for a very intimate evening of music, get to know the artist. You don't have to wait outside backstage for the artist to come out. They're right there. You know,
right. There's no screaming and stomping and lighting of lighters or yelling of Freebird.
Well, sometimes.
Okay, the stomping I'll give you, but the Freebird probably not.
No, not too much. Not too much. Yeah.
As a longtime performer, do you prefer to play for a more intimate venue like that, a 50 to 70 per? I mean,
I do. I mean, I haven't had too many opportunities to play in huge venues. I've opened at the Brit a few times, and I've played at the Criterion, and you know those experiences are wonderful. But having that personal connection, being 4 or 5 feet away from the audience, is great. And I've had so many performers that I've presented over the years who play big jazz festivals all around the world, and they come and they play for this intimate space where you can hear a pin drop, and they've all commented that they much prefer these type of venues than playing for, you know, 15 or 20,000 people in a large stadium.
It must be fun, too, to play in some of these intimate venues or in the intimate venue that is the Siskiyou Barn when people are used to playing at bars and things like that where the focus is not necessarily on the music.
Very much so. Yeah, this, like I said, you can hear a pin drop. I had a concert a couple of weeks ago with a wonderful duo from Canada, Jennifer Scott and Renee Wurst, up at the old Siskiyou Barn. And it was the Friday night that it poured. It rained so hard, and the barn has a metal roof.
Oh boy.
But it was great. It was part of the atmosphere, and everybody got into it, and the theme seemed to shift. Many of the tunes that they were choosing were tunes about rain and about water, and everybody got into it, and it was really one of the more magical nights we've had there. So, yeah.
Ed Dunn-Savage, has the change, and it's been a wrenching change in the music business, it's really for basically all content providers, including public radio, people get things through different pathways. Now, people generally don't buy music or don't buy certainly discs anymore as they did once. They can buy individual songs or get them from friends or whatever. So it's been a big difference in sales for the big artists who have big names across the country. I wonder if there's been a real ripple effect, though, in local music, though, in people like yourself who are playing at local venues, places like the Pascal Winery.
Yeah, I don't know so much about the local, you know, the local thing. I do know, talking to the artists that I present in the concert series, that basically everybody, a CD is a calling card that they have, and it's a souvenir that people can take away. That's why people are out on the road. Nobody's making a living just selling CDs, you know, unless you are a big name act. And so that's what it is. And so, you know, I see artists come in and they sell 20 or 30 CDs at a concert, a small concert where 70 or 80 people are at. So that's pretty good. And it definitely helps them with their gas on the road. But that's what it is. It's a souvenir, basically.
Is it also something, when you mentioned, is it a calling card? Does it sort of say, you know, I'm established here, I've actually got some recordings on a finished?
Oh, it certainly helps, sure.
Yeah. All right, so Jazz Appreciation Month, how long has that existed? Are you aware of the history behind this?
You know, I'm not sure exactly how long. It was started by the Smithsonian Institute, I'm going to say 10 to 15 years ago. And so if you go on to Jazz Appreciation Month, just Google that, you'll come up to the Smithsonian site, which has lots of information. Another organization has kind of piggybacked on that, and they're calling April 30th Jazz International Jazz Appreciation Day. And I was just looking online this morning, and they've been doing this for several years where there are jazz performances worldwide by all the top big name jazz performers that you can stream and go online and watch video. And from Tokyo to the U.S. and Europe, it's kind of a cool jazz marathon, just to raise awareness of the art form.
Is the art form growing? Is it contracting? I mean, you know, it's sort of like so many things that in a time, again, of wrenching change in entertainment and the media, different reports about, you know, whether jazz is actually finding a new flowering or whether people are getting bored of it and moving on to other things. Or what's your take?
Well, the great Frank Zappa once said, jazz isn't dead, it just smells funny. And it's kind of like that. I mean, I think jazz and classical music are in very similar boats. You know, jazz came up as people's music. I mean, it was the pop music of the 20s, 30s, and 40s, and 50s. It wasn't until rock and roll came in that it wasn't the popular music.
All right, hold that thought. We'll come back from a short break here. We're talking to Ed Dunn-Savage from the Siskiyou Music Project about Jazz Appreciation Month, and we've yet to talk about the Siskiyou Music Project's upcoming concerts in support of Jazz Appreciation Month. We'll talk about those with Ed Dunn-Savage and take some more of your phone calls and emails if you'd like to join us. Back on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 15. Thirty-six on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We are talking today about jazz and Jazz Appreciation Month with one of the jazz conveyors or purveyors in the Rogue Valley. Ed Dunn-Savage is also the artistic director at the Siskiyou Music Project, based in the Ashland area, which its slogan says it all: intimate concerts and innovative education. You can join us on the Exchange as we talk about jazz, its history, Jazz Appreciation Month, and getting more people interested in the music form. Our phone number here, our lone phone number, 541-552-6782. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. We're talking about the growth of jazz. It really was the people's music. It was the stuff that the common folk had put
out there.
Oh,
indeed. That's, you know, that's what our parents and grandparents went out to go dancing to, was to big bands and swing bands. And then with rock and roll in the late 50s and 60s, that changed, and that became the popular music. And now jazz, kind of like classical, it's sort of moved into the concert hall in terms of, you know, where the big money is. You know, Wynton Marsalis and the Lincoln Center Jazz Orchestra and such. And for me, jazz belongs in more intimate spaces, in the clubs where people can really interact with the musicians and dance if they want. You know, you don't see too many people dancing at Carnegie Hall.
True.
But I think that's reflected in overall sales of music. You're talking about CD sales. I mean, jazz and classical both have been about maybe 2-3% of the entire sales market, and that's a pretty small percentage in the overall sales of music. I understand country has now moved up above of rap, and as I just heard that recently, that country music is actually at the top of record sales.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Huh. I wonder what the dynamic's driving that. But, you know, jazz is one of those forms, though, that it seems like there's always a report, oh, you know, jazz is dying. There's a, you know, kind of like the old joke about the second book off the Gutenberg press was about the demise of the publishing industry.
Yeah, and I don't think it's dying as long as people are out there listening and supporting it and new musicians coming up to continue it along and develop it and expand it. And you know, I don't think the music has gone through a real revolution since some of the artists like Miles Davis, innovators like Miles Davis and John Coltrane and Wes Montgomery, guys like that who really took it to a different level. One of these days we'll see the next innovator, and hopefully that'll create a new resurgence.
The programs that the Siskiyou Music Project offers through schools, what general age ranges do you target, and what kinds of things do you teach them?
It started off just going into high school jazz bands and doing more kind of on-hand workshops and clinics, but now we've pretty much go into all grades, from first grade up to university. I bring in artists into SOU occasionally. And then, you know, for elementary school kids, it's just getting out there and playing for them. Many of these kids have never even seen a live musician before. They see them on TV. They see them on computers, you know, but they haven't. We go out there with a saxophone player or a trumpet player. They've never seen a brass instrument. It's amazing to see them looking at this. And I talk to the teachers and they say, yeah, these kids have never even heard a live musician, especially when we get out. We go out into Grants Pass and out to Josephine County, the more rural areas especially. You know, in Ashland, we're a little bit spoiled here with all the culture we have. But
it's true. There's people kick in a bit more money for the schools, which you had mentioned early on, the obvious answer to an obvious question, which is, you know, how many schools have seen their programs cut, and a lot apparently. Have you noticed any restoration coming in the last year or two, though, since things have gotten somewhat better for
Not a lot. It really depends on the teacher. What I find is that, you know, you have this small group of heroes in the public school system that even though the programs have been cut, they are continuing. They see the importance of having music, some kind of music. And so they make time to teach the kids music, even though it's not a formal music class. And so when they've heard about our program, they get very excited because we come in and do it for them, basically, and turn the kids onto music and talk to them about rhythm, how to clap in time, how to snap your fingers, how to sing, those type of things. Yeah.
How does that get paid for? I mean, is it from grants that you get to the Siskiyou Music Project?
Just like you keep things running here at Jefferson Public Radio. We're nonprofit, and we're a very small organization. But basically, it's small grants, sponsorship from local businesses, and then we have membership in the institute that keeps it going. The concerts on a good day pay for themselves, not always. Mm-hmm. So we rely on outside funding to keep it going.
And you have I noticed this one concert already has gone by over the course of the weekend for Jazz Appreciation Month, but you've got two more coming up.
Yes, this Sunday we have a wonderful group. It's Jessica Fichot, who is a wonderful singer-songwriter, performer from L.A. She's Chinese-American who grew up in Paris.
Wow.
And she writes and sings in French, Mandarin, Spanish, English. Amazing performer. It's about the third time I've presented her. I discovered her at Alex's playing one night.
Did you really?
About 10 years ago. Yeah, she was playing, and there were about five people in the audience, and I gave her my card. I said, next time you're coming through, and so this will be the third time we've presented her.
So she just fell into your lap.
Yeah.
She was here in
Ashland
already.
Yeah, wow. She's just touring. And then our final show for the season is on May 18th with Dimitri Matheny, wonderful flugelhorn player that I've worked with, and I'm actually involved in this program. We're doing a tribute to the great jazz guitarist Jim Hall, who passed away this year, and Dimitri's mentor, Art Farmer, the wonderful flugelhorn trumpet player. And that will be our final show for the season. One other program I want to mention is next Wednesday, April 23rd, we are also co-sponsoring the South Medford Jazz Celebration, which is a celebration of high school jazz. And this is at the South Medford High School. And it's a day of clinics and workshops, and then a concert at 6 p.m. And you can just buy tickets at the door. This is at the new South Medford High School.
All right, so that's the one on the 23rd.
That's April 23rd.
So let's walk backwards. And the Jim Hall thing is when?
That's in May. That's May 18th.
May 18th, okay. Yep. And then the Jessica Fichot
Is this Sunday at Pascal Winery, Easter Sunday? We're already at about 50 reservations. Often our shows sell out, mm-hmm. and so I do recommend that people call or email to make reservations for a show they're interested in, because oftentimes people will show up at the door and we won't have any more seats.
Oh, okay.
That's a good problem to have.
That's a good problem.
Yeah.
So that's SiskiyouMusicProject.com?
Exactly.
All right, SiskiyouMusicProject.com, and Ed Dunn-Savage is the artistic director at the Siskiyou Music Project. Are you the only staff, or are there more?
I'm pretty much the only staff. We have volunteers, and we have our board of directors.
Yeah. All right. Well, good work keeping music alive in the many ways that you do, and thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange
to talk
about Jazz Appreciation Month.
My pleasure.
Good to see you.